58.
Yeah.
That should wake you
wake
up.
Yeah.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, April 19th, 2017. This is the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. And we are now officially in the second part of our session. So, and that means that we are no longer entertaining Senate bills, we are entertaining House bills. And the initial batch of bills that we've received from the House, I think in total have received maybe 10 no votes on the floor over there. so the things
we have an opportunity.
So it's up to us.
We have an
it's up to us too. Thanks. Damn it, send us hard bills. But no, we have some very good bills. And we're going to be having public hearings on three of them. But before we do that, we're going to have a work session on one of those. Now, you know, I don't usually like to have a work session without having a public hearing first.
I think it's better this way.
But this is a bill that was sent to us in error. And really, I think it should have gone to Senator Prezonsky's committee.
And they have two of those members here on this committee, so we might as well let them have the fun.
Yes, actually, we
actually
do
have three.
Yeah, we actually have a
three.
We have a majority.
Is that right?
So maybe
well,
we should just
I forgot about
maybe
it.
We should just pass
Let's do
this
it here.
Bill right now. Okay, so I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3176A, and Beth, what is this bill?
Oh boy, I don't even know what this bill is. This is a bill that would provide that in determining mitigation for purposes of imposing a sentence, that a court may consider whether the defendant has committed crimes while under duress, compulsion, direction, or pressure from a person who has committed domestic violence against a defendant.
Right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
I really am wondering why this is here.
It's going back to you.
Yeah.
We're going to send it.
I didn't even know what it was.
It came to us in error.
Oh, yeah. This is one. Yes. Okay. I saw a memo that said there was something here that was going to come to us. Now I know why.
No idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think when the person doing the referrals was looking at the committees, they saw your name on this and figured this was the place to send it, but that's not quite true.
Drop down a line. When
that's
they
right.
Were,
yeah.
Yes. So, thank you, Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3176 without recommendation back to the Senate President for a re-referral to a different committee.
Okay. Senator Roblin has moved House Bill 3176 without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to a different committee. Any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, it will go back and be sent where it belongs.
Good idea.
I'll close the work session on House Bill 3176A.
Do you think that's judiciary?
Yeah, that'll be up to the President. And
I'll open, we'll just do these in order. I'll open our public hearing on House Bill 2256A. And Beth, what is this?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2256 would define dietary supplement as food for the purposes of regulation by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. There was minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. And do we have anyone
the
here to speak to
is
it?
Here.
Okay, Lisa and friends. Welcome back. So was this an agency bill then?
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Senator Denbrough, members of the committees. This is an agency bill. This is one like we had here in this committee previously. It really is kind of a statutory cleanup and providing the agency very specific authority to regulate dietary supplements as a food in our food safety program. And this came about like some of the other issues we've brought to you when we were in an enforcement case, and we realized that we didn't have very specific authority to deal with dietary supplements in our food safety program. We currently license these operations and look at them for sanitation, but we don't look at them for the other issues in terms of what's in the product. I'm going to let Stephanie talk a little bit more about what we would do with this additional authority and clarity.
Okay, great. Yes, welcome Thank down,
you.
Stephanie.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. For the record, Stephanie Page with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Including dietary supplements in our definition of food would give us the legal authority to deal with dietary supplements, for example, that contain ingredients other than what are marketed to be part of the product. That has been an issue periodically with dietary supplements in other states. Foreign substances have been found in some supplements. It would give us the authority to deal with supplements where the manufacturer makes incorrect claims about what the product is able to do. And it would also help us, give us the ability to access records to make sure that what is claimed to be in the product is actually there.
Colleagues, do you have any questions?
I'm wondering if, excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm getting used to this. Prozanski is always, you know, using the gavel on my fingers and knuckles. Can you give me any kind of statistical relevance? You see so many cases of this sort of thing or whatnot out of how many food supplement providers are currently licensed in your program, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, Senator Linthicum, I will get you the exact statistics on how many folks we license. We have a good number now. Generally, we have not seen violations of the sanitation regulations that we currently inspect them for. However, when the Food and Drug Administration has done inspections in other states for these additional issues that I mentioned, they have found a relatively high rate of violations in some facilities.
And what do you mean by relatively high?
I'll get you some exact statistics, Chair Dembrough, Senator Linthicum.
But enough to raise concerns.
Enough to raise concerns and warrant, I think, oversight. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Yes, Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at the workup that you did for the agency as to the examples, and examples include diet supplements, including but not limited to ginseng, St. John's wort, vitamin D. So my reading of this, these are would be diet supplements that are originating and manufactured here within the state.
Chair Dembrough, Senator Prozanski, that's correct. Those are some examples of dietary supplements in general. In terms of what the facilities in Oregon produce, if you'd like more information about that, I'd be happy to get that for you.
Well, let me just throw one out that I'm familiar with, if I say it correctly. Rose Mountain Herbs, which I understand is one of our stellar producers and stuff like that. So it would be going to a plant such as that where they are, in fact, compounding or making whatever the substances are that they're putting out there on the market. And Terra Firma, who does tincture type stuff, that type.
Chair Dembrough, Senator Prozanski, that's correct. I remember seeing Rose Mountain Herbs on a list of our dietary supplement manufacturers. We do currently license them and inspect them with respect to sanitation. We just don't do some of the records reviews and other things that we're talking about.
Okay. One other question.
Yes.
And is there a limitation as to size of the operation in the sense of, I'm assuming, I lack better terms, there are some mom and pop type of cottage businesses that might be going to, I'm going to say, craft shows and stuff like that, cultural type events. I don't know for sure. I know like Terra Firma, who's now a pretty large distributor, they used to be at like the Saturday market. And they still may be, who knows. But that's what we're, I guess, I'm just curious as to, is there a threshold for the size of the companies that you're going to be looking at? Not that you should, I just want to know.
Chair Dembrough, Senator Prozanski, there isn't an exemption for firms under a certain size. So this would cover all manufacturers.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you both very much. Okay. So I'll close our public hearing on 2256. I think we may have a work session mm-hmm. scheduled already for next week. I see we have the B team here. So we just heard from the A team, and now it's time for the B team. So why don't we jump down to 2533 then?
B team, is that like boys and girls? Or
that's B as in B.
I think we're the A team. But
welcome.
Thank you for having me. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48, Happy Valley, outer southeast Portland. This is a technical fix, but let me give you just a little bit of background, just since we all came this way today.
Well, actually, before you start, Jeff, Beth, you want to just give us an overview of the bill?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2533 would define nucleus colony, and also it would define it to be a colony used primarily to produce new queens or workers for the purpose of starting a new colony or adding to an existing colony. Specify the fees charged by a local government for registering hives in residential areas must not be higher than the fee charged by ODA, and stipulates that no per application fee or per colony fee would apply to register a nucleus colony. Minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Thanks, Beth. Okay.
Thank you. So back in 2014, I did chief sponsor House Bill 4139 and established a task force. It was on pollinator health. And that was because of the significant bee die-offs that we had in two or three places, but primarily Wilsonville was the one that got my attention. And that task force yielded a number of recommendations. One was to establish a diagnostic facility at OSU Honeybee Lab and then appropriate some money to the OSU Extension Service for educational materials. To establish a reporting system for pollinator die-offs. And a fourth item was to increase pesticide registration fees. And this is to tax, I'll get into that in a minute. So in 2015, I sponsored House Bill 3362 that captured those recommendations. And we did establish pollinator health and outreach education plan. However, during the excitement of the rulemaking process, there was never any specificity about which hives and colonies would require registration. Frankly, I'm not the expert, but I didn't know that there were different hives. There are two types of colonies. One is a pollinator colony, and those are the ones that actually produce honey. And this is a colony used for providing pollination service for agriculture or crops. Then there's a nucleus colony. That's a small honeybee colony created from larger colonies, but not used for production purposes. They're smaller hives in smaller boxes, usually intended to have another queen in case a pollinator production colony goes queenless. We have the experts back here that will explain this in further detail to you, but basically beekeepers would be forced to pay registration under the way the rules are right now for both types of colonies, even though they don't get any revenue from the nucleus colonies. So we just want to correct that so that they're only contributing to this fund for the colonies on which they make money. So House Bill 2533 exempts and defines nucleus colonies from the registration needs and fees, and I ask your support for House Bill 2533 and the -1 amendment.
Great. Questions for Representative Reardon?
No questions for the representative, but I do have a question for Beth.
Okay.
I'm looking at the last bill we had up in this one and looking at the materials. It reflects what I would call most current stuff that's happened here in the Senate. I thought that since they were House bills, we would be tracking everything that occurred in the sense of materials that might have been handed in while they were on hearing.
Transferring them over?
Yeah, to me, if that's not happening, I'd like to, not for just our committee, but it seems like we should have whatever happened on the House side, So we know who might have given testimony there that may not be able to be in the Senate.
So did you search on today's meeting or on the bill number?
I went on today's meeting.
Yeah.
If you go to the issue?
Yeah, if you go to the bill number, I think you should get all the testimony that's been submitted.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And it is kind of a glitch in the system. I'm not sure people are aware of that. It'd be nice if it worked both ways, but you have to go to the bill number.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you for the clarification. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
So you have other people to testify here if you need additional information. If this is sufficient, that's fine, too. So.
Okay. Now,
thank you for having me.
Looks like you ramrodded this one through the House. So we'll see what we can do in the Senate.
All right.
Trust your judgment.
Yes. Thanks, Representative Reardon. Okay. So we have Ralph Rodia, Harry Vanderpool, and Jenny Dressler, please.
Senator Denbrough, members of the committee, my name is Ralph Rodia, and I'm a member of the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And Representative Renner really pretty much spelled out what's going on, but kind of give you a little bit more background. How did we get here in the first place? Because we all thought after 2015 we were fine. One of our beekeepers asked the Department of Agriculture, does the fee apply to all colonies? We all said no, but the Department of Agriculture decided to ask Department of Justice. That was a mistake in our opinion.
It usually is.
And they said, well, the way it's written, it covers hives, and you've got small hives, big hives, covers them all. And I suggested Department of Ag, just ignore Department of Justice and don't assess the fee. And they said, we don't have the authority to do that, and so we're now here trying to correct that, which is an oversight. Beekeepers, just understandably, in our language, when we say a nucleus colony, we know that it's not a production colony. But when the law was adopted, it simply said colony. And the Department of Justice said, well, there's different colonies. You should have basically defined what you meant. And so that's how we're at, where we're at now. And the rest of the wording in 2533 basically straightens out some other of the language that existed or need some correction. As long as they were correcting, they decided to do some other stuff too. So it is kind of a housekeeping bill, but it's important to us as beekeepers that it be clarified.
Great. Mr. Vanderpool?
Senator Denbrough, members of the committee, I thought of picture's worth a thousand words.
Could you just give us your name for your
My name's Harry Vanderpool. I'm president of the Oregon State Beekeepers Association.
Thanks.
So I brought a little visual for you here, and you know, you probably all are familiar with the beehive, which is about the size of this desk here and about twice as high, and we have here a nucleus colony.
That's a real one? It's not just a mock-up.
No, it's real.
This is a three-frame nucleus colony. It's got three frames in here and a little feeder, and we use these to produce queens throughout the year because our production colonies from time to time go queenless. This just came out of the warehouse, and we will use it throughout the season. It'll go back in the warehouse at the end of the year. But if you think in terms of, if I can raise four queens out of this, I would get charged four times for the use. And all it is a tool that we're using to stay at the level we need to be to continue out through the year.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So the description of the bill says this is for colonies having primary purpose of producing new queens or workers. To start a new colony. So how does the workers, how does that come in?
Senator Denbrough, so today in my operation, we have ones that are slightly larger, and I was going through and taking hives that are getting too large, meaning they're going to run ahead and swarm, and I was removing frames of brood and bees and introducing queens in them. Those will grow And then as we find hives that have gone queenless and have actually taken a large dip in population, we can not only introduce a new queen, but queen and brood and bees, and actually restart that hive and give it a running start. So the second thing we can do is occasionally someone in the bee club wants to start beekeeping, and we will have, they can buy their outfit, you know, a hive, and then we start them out with a nucleus colony.
Jenny, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Chair Denbrough, members of the committee. I will be brief. Jenny Dressler, Oregon Farm Bureau, here today to support House Bill 2533 as amended. Worked with the Oregon State Beekeeping Association and Representative Reardon on getting this technical fix. Saw this as a way to support the industry, especially as management costs have been increasing with varroa mite issues over the past year or so. Here to support these guys, and heard about some of the cost, and I think the folks here who are the real experts could tell you about some of the cost and what that cost impact could be for assessing a fee on every nucleus colony. But it seemed like a easy red tape cutting bill for us and a way to support the industry. So that is why we're here today. Thanks.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Colleagues, do you have any questions? I'm really struck by the important work that these bees do, right? I mean, they are really enhancing value for agriculture. Jenny, I'm wondering, are these worker bees paid on a piece rate basis, or do they get a fixed salary? And are they subject to minimum wage levels if they're in an urban area?
Chair Denbrough, these are great questions.
Senator Denbrough, they get free health care.
Great. Okay. Thank you all very much for coming.
And they get supplemental feeding in the winter.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else that wanted to testify on 2533? Seeing none, I'll close that public hearing, and I'll open our final public hearing, which is on House Bill 2364. And what is this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2364 would remove a reference to a repealed statute and replace it with a correct statutory reference, and this has to do with the statutes governing agricultural mediation program services.
Okay. And okay, well, let's have Jenny Dressler again. Brenda. Jenny, you wrote this, didn't you?
Fricketich.
And Scott Dahlman, please. Okay, welcome all of you.
Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We are here today to support House Bill 2364. This bill is also a technical fix, I think, in the true sense of the word. And I submitted my testimony for the record, but in 2015, we passed, as a legislature, House Bill 2509, which was the Ag Mediation Bill, came out of a work group that Representative Brian Clem led and that others in the legislature participated in. To address some of the coexistence issues in a way that's voluntary and gets farmers talking to each other and really incentivizes those communications. And then in that same year, the legislature also passed, I think it was House Bill 2444, which was a cleanup bill around the ag mediation statutes, which were really focused more on labor mediation. And it's something that Farm Bureau has also been very involved in. So in 2509, there was language that allowed the Department of Agriculture to provide mediation services under ORS 36.270 to assist in mediating voluntary resolutions. But then the House Bill 2444 deleted that reference. So we essentially gave the department that authority and then took it away in two bills. So this is kind of a cleanup to allow us to actually implement that program and kind of kickstart it and get it off the ground. So, thank you. And I'm available for any questions.
Great.
Chair Demereaux, members of the committee, my name is Brenda Furkatich, and I'm a third-generation farmer from St. Paul. I am, like I said, the third generation on my family's sustainable farm. We grow wheat, vegetables, vegetable seeds, hazelnuts, grass seed, and clover. I farm alongside of my husband. We raise 11 different crops and two small boys. I'm here today to speak to you in support of House Bill 2364. While this is just a technical fix on House Bill 2509, I do see it as an important piece of legislation, and especially because it talks about coexistence. Coexistence, I know, has come up many times this legislative session. I've heard people speak about how it can have coexistence between different crops, how it's possible, how it's been done for generations. But I've also seen people talk about how it cannot be accomplished. And I can only speak to my 11 years of farming experience and growing up on the farm in a very diverse growing region and growing a number of crops within our farm borders itself. And from that experience, I have found that coexistence is possible. It's easy to get defensive when practices within an industry collide, and I know that when it becomes farmer versus farmer in any forum, it's really hard to swallow because both have very passionate reasons why their side is correct. Some of those reasons are, like you've heard before, who's been there longer, which crop has a higher value, what state is that person from, and if they're not from Oregon, it becomes a different conversation. And these are real issues. They come really fast to the surface, and they become very emotional. But I think that if you look at the bottom line and you can see that neither of both sides wants each other gone, that we just want more communication, education on what's happening over the fence row. I think that that's where you can start to work together to find some resolutions. Pollen is one of the most obvious conversation starters because we truly can't control where our pollen goes from our plants. But on our farm, we also have those planting restrictions with certified grasses, for instance. We actually have to create our own buffers from our neighbors' fields. These areas around our fields are not only harvested separately, they're sold at a lower price because they're not technically certified. We take care of those buffer zones ourselves, and it's a loss to our farm, but we are protecting our own crop within that field. This example of coexistence has been around since certification process started, and it doesn't even require a conversation with your neighbor. The burden of this practice is taken on by yourself, to protect your farm and your crops from pollen drift from outside fields. Vegetable seeds are another issue. We currently grow three different varieties of vegetable seeds on our farm. We actually tried for about 3 years before we ever got a contract because using the voluntary pinning system, we're not able to get isolation on the ground that we farm. We've been growing different crops for 3 years now, and so we are technically grandfathered into the system. But that does not mean that we can farm whatever we want, wherever we want on our operation. We have to constantly be in conversation with our fieldmen, with our neighbors, and with the pinning system to make sure that we can put what's in the ground in the right places. With all the different crops grown not only on our farm, but also in our region, we also come into conflicts around the use of certain herbicides. During the springtime in particular, in a normal year, I would say, the timing of bloom often comes when weeds need to be sprayed out of a lot of our crops, grass seed crops in particular. So we have to be very mindful of the weather, the nozzles we're using, the additives we can put in to make sure the spray goes on target and stays there, and also the crops that we were spraying next to. We have sprayed next to budding hazelnut orchards and not had an issue, and we always do everything in our power to make sure that spray goes where it needs to go. One example this year is our applicator out spraying a grass seed field. He realized that the wind had changed mid-application, and it was next to a field of beets. And it's not our field, it's our neighbor's field. So we actually took off 80 feet from our field and didn't spray it. We're hoping to be able to return because the weeds are getting taller and we will probably take a hit on that portion of the field. But we did it because it was the right thing to do and we didn't want to hurt our neighbor's crops. Communication and education are both huge contributors to making coexistence work in Oregon, and I think it can be done. There are over 225 different crops here. And conversations with neighbors can go a long way, but what also you have to take on your own responsibility of protecting your farm and your growing area, and that's also important. But it's true when that fails, and there will be times when mistakes happen and a third party needs to come in. And I think that the ODA will do a great job because they are educated on our agriculture and cropping systems, and they can be that unbiased voice of reason. So thank you for taking the time to hear us today.
Thank you. Scott.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, Scott Dahlman, Policy Director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter, speaking here today in support of House Bill 2364, a technical fix to what we believe is a very important law. So as you've heard from us before, we believe that Oregon's agricultural diversity is what makes it so special. With over 200 different crops and different methods, conventional, organic, biotech, identity preserved, we think there's room for all of those methods here in Oregon. But because of the diversity, as you've heard, conflicts can arise. But we do continue to believe that coexistence is key. Unfortunately, in 2015, there are a few bills that attempted to pit different types of agriculture against each other instead of promoting neighbors working together. This led Representative Clem to pull together a variety of stakeholders for a work group on coexistence issues so we could spend a little bit more time delving into what some good solutions can be. The original focus of that work group was on GE crops, but the group quickly realized that the issue of coexistence between crops, as you just heard from Brenda, exists between a variety of crops, whether they are GE or not. The group also determined at that time that having the legislature or the Department of Agriculture choosing what crops farmers could plant was not a desired outcome, and that coexistence was possible and should be promoted. So the result of that was House Bill 2509 in 2015. It encouraged neighbors with coexistence conflicts or potential conflicts to engage in mediation if they're having trouble coming to agreement. The reason we like mediation so much is that it brings people to the table, and it also allows the opportunity for things that you wouldn't be able to do through a regulatory structure. So one example I like to use is by staggering planting times, a lot of times you can eliminate a coexistence issue. Through regulation, you're not able to force somebody to stagger their planting times, but if you get two neighboring growers in the same room, they can soon discover that by making that small alteration, that both of them will be able to coexist. The bill had broad bipartisan support in both chambers. It came unanimously out of the Senate in 2015 and only one vote in opposition in the House. Unfortunately, as you've heard, rulemaking revealed a problem where a reference was removed for one that was put in. So this is probably the simplest bill you'll see all year. It literally makes one number change, but don't let that fool you. It's very, very important that we have this going forward. So we urge your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I have a vague memory of having been on that work group. But fortunately, I can't remember any of the details, except that there were many meetings, and they happened at night.
Yes.
So, you know, the issue of mediation came up last week, was it, or 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the GE issue, and, you know, we heard some testimony that mediation wasn't working, and so is one of the reasons that it isn't working because we haven't been able to implement this new program, or is it? Do you have a sense of that? And one of the things I committed to doing last week was scheduling at some point an informational hearing about how mediation works and, you know, what the goals of it are, how it could work, you know, et cetera. So is this a function of it, or is it a function that there just aren't people asking for it?
So I'll take a crack at that.
You can always call in the A team.
Yeah. Chair Dimbro, I think it's hard to pinpoint exactly why it's not working at this point, because although the ODA mediation program has not been available in the last year, the USDA mediation program has been available. It would be speculation for me to figure out why people are not utilizing that. I think since it is a new program, there is some of just getting word out that the program is available as issues do arise. But I think that at least having the ODA program and having a couple of options will at least make it more available for people if they want to use it.
And Chair Dimbro, I would echo that. We hear about conflicts often at the Farm Bureau. People call and say, my neighbor is doing this. What do I do? And I have been recommending that this program, the ODA does not have the authority to mediate those disputes at this point. And they don't do it directly. They employ third-party auditors as well. So it one step removes them from that. But I know that the USDA-certified mediators went through all of their training over this past summer. And so hopefully that that program is ready to go, but I couldn't speculate as to why folks aren't actively using it, hoping that maybe the Department of Ag has some statistics on what requests they're receiving. So
the Farm Bureau's role is just simply to refer them to the department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would refer them to the department or to other services that could help resolve that dispute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any questions, colleagues? Okay, thank you very much. It's very informative. Anyone else want to speak to this bill, 2364? Okay, seeing none, I'll close our public hearing on 2364. We will, as I mentioned, come back to this subject of mediation at some point when we have time to explore it further. I think we've scheduled all three of these bills for work sessions next week, and so we'll deal with them with dispatch. Anything else for the good of the order? Colleagues, we're not meeting tomorrow again, want to remind you. So we won't be meeting again until Monday. So with that, everyone, have a great weekend. Beekeepers, thanks again for coming. We are adjourned.
I know.
We are adjourned.
I know.